date with Evelyn. Evelyn comes in on the call waiting on my third line, and I wasn't going to take it, but since I'm holding on the second line to find out if Bullock, the maitre d' at the new Davis Francois restaurant on Central Park South, has any cancellations for tonight, so Courtney, holding on the first line, and I might have dinner, I pick it up in the hope that it's my dry cleaners, but no, it's Evelyn. And though it really isn't fair to Courtney, I take her call. I tell Evelyn I'm on the other line with my private trainer. I then tell Courtney I have to take Paul Owen's call and that I'll see her at Turtles at 8, and then I cut myself off from Bullock, the maitre d'. Evelyn's staying at the Carlisle since the woman who lives in the brownstone next to hers was found murdered last night, decapitated. And this is why Evelyn's all shook up. She couldn't deal with the office today, so she spent the afternoon calming herself with facials at Elizabeth Arden. She demands that we have dinner tonight, and then says, before I can make up a plausible lie, an acceptable excuse, "Where were you last night, Patrick?" I pause. "Why? Where were you?" I ask, while guzzling from a liter of Evian, still slightly sweaty from this afternoon's workout. "Arguing with the concierge at the Carlisle," she says, sounding rather pissed off. "Now tell me, Patrick, where were you?" "Why were you arguing with him?" I ask. "Patrick," she says, a declarative statement. "I'm here," I say after a minute. "Patrick." It doesn't matter. "The phone in my room didn't have two lines, and there was no call waiting," she says. "Where were you?" "I was fooling around renting videotapes," I say, pleased, giving myself high five, the cordless phone cradled in my neck. "I wanted to come over," she says in a whiny little girl tone. "I was scared. I still am. Can't you hear it in my voice?" "Actually, you sound like anything but." "No, Patrick, seriously. I'm quite terrified," she says. "I'm shaking. Just like a leaf I'm shaking. Ask Mia, my facialist. She said I was tense."
"Well," I say, "you couldn't have come over anyway."
"Honey, why not?" She whines, and then addresses someone who has just entered her suite. "Oh, wheel it over there near the window." "No, that window. And can you tell me where that damn masseuse is?"
"Because your neighbor's head was in my freezer," I yawn, stretching.
"Listen, dinner?"
"Where?"
"Can you hear me?"
At 8:30, the two of us are sitting across from each other in Barcadia. Evelyn's wearing an Anne Klein rayon jacket, a wool crepe skirt, a silk blouse from Bonwitz, antique gold and agate earrings from James Robinson that cost roughly $4,000. And I'm wearing a double-breasted suit, a silk shirt with woven stripes, a patterned silk tie and leather slip-ons, all by Gianni Versace. I neither canceled the reservation at Turtles nor told Courtney not to meet me there, so she'll probably show up around 8:15, completely confused. And if she hasn't taken any Elavil today, she'll probably be furious. And it's this fact, not the bottle of Cristal that Evelyn insists on ordering and then adds cassis to, that I laugh out loud about. I spent most of the afternoon buying myself early Christmas presents. A large pair of scissors at a drugstore near City Hall, a letter opener from Hammacher Schlemmer, a cheese knife from Bloomingdale's to go along with the cheese board that Jean, my secretary who's in love with me, left on my desk before she went to lunch while I was in a meeting. The Patty Winter show this morning was about the possibility of nuclear war, and according to the panel of experts, the odds are pretty good it will happen sometime within the next month. Evelyn's face seems chalky to me right now, her mouth lined with a purple lipstick that gives off an almost startling effect, and I realize that she's belatedly taken Tim Price's advice to stop using her tanning lotion. Instead of mentioning this and have her bore me silly with inane denials, I ask about Tim's girlfriend, Meredith, whom Evelyn despises for reasons never made quite clear to me. And because of rumors about Courtney and myself, Courtney is also on Evelyn's shit list for reasons that are a little clearer. I place a hand over the top of the champagne flute when the apprehensive waitress, at Evelyn's request, attempts to add some blueberry cassis into my Cristal. "No, thank you," I tell her. "Maybe later, in a separate glass."
party pooper.
Evelyn giggles, then takes a sharp breath.
But you smell nice. What are you wearing? Obsession?
You party pooper, is it obsession?
No,
I say grimly. Paul Sebastian.
Of course.
She smiles, downs her second glass. She seems in a much better mood, boisterous almost. More than you'd expect of someone whose neighbor's head was sliced off in a matter of seconds while she was still conscious by an electric mini chainsaw.
Evelyn's eyes momentarily glitter in the candlelight, then revert to their normal pallid gray.
How is Meredith? I ask, trying to mask my void of disinterest.
Oh, God. She's dating Richard Cunningham,
Evelyn moans. He's at First Boston, if you can believe it.
I know, I mention. Tim was going to break it off with her, call it quits.
Why, for God's sake? Evelyn asks, surprised, intrigued. They had that fabulous place in the Hamptons.
I remember him telling me that he was sick to death of watching her do nothing but her nails all weekend.
Oh, my God, Evelyn says, and then genuinely confused.
You mean, wait, she didn't have someone do them for her?
Tim said, and he reiterated this fact quite often, that she had all the personality of a game show host, I say dryly, sipping from the flute. She smiles to herself secretly.
Tim is a rascal.
Idly, I wonder if Evelyn would sleep with another woman if I brought one over to her brownstone, and if I insisted, whether they'd let me watch the two of them get it on. If they'd let me direct, tell them what to do, position them under hot halogen lamps. Probably not. The odds don't look good. But what if I forced her at gunpoint? Threatened to cut them both up, maybe, if they didn't comply. The thought doesn't seem unappealing, and I can imagine the whole scenario quite clearly. I start counting the banquets that encircle the room. Then I start counting the people sitting in the banquets.
She's asking me about Tim. Where do you think that rascal has been?
Rumor is he's at Saks, she says ominously.
Rumor is, I say, he's in rehab. The champagne isn't cold enough.
I'm distracted. Doesn't he send you postcards?
Has he been sick?
She asks, with the slightest trepidation.
Yes, I think so, I say. I think that's what it is. You know, if you order a bottle of Cristal, it should be at least, you know, cold.
Oh, my God, Evelyn says. You think he might be sick?
Yes, he's in a hospital in Arizona, I add. The word Arizona has a mysterious tinge to it, and I say it again. Arizona, I think.
Oh, my God! Evelyn exclaims, now truly alarmed, and she gulps down what little Cristal is left in her glass.
Who knows? I manage the slightest of shrugs.
You don't think... She breathes in and puts her glass down. You don't think it's...
And now she looks around the restaurant before leaning in, whispering.
AIDS.
Oh, no, nothing like that, I say, though immediately I wish I had paused long enough before answering to scare her.
Just general brain.
I bite the tip off an herb breadstick and shrug. Injuries.
Evelyn sighs, relieved, and then says, is it warm in here?
All I can think about is this poster I saw on the subway station the other night before I killed those two black kids. A photo of a baby calf, its head turned toward the camera, its eyes caught wide and staring by the flash, and its body seemed like it was boxed into some kind of crate. And in big black letters below the photo it read, question, why can't this veal calf walk? Then, answer, because it only has two legs. But then I saw another one, this exact same photo, the same exact calf, yet beneath it, this one read, stay out of publishing.
I pause, still fingering the breadstick, then ask, is any of this registering with you, or would I get more of a response from, oh, an ice bucket?
I say all of this staring straight at Evelyn, enunciating precisely, trying to explain myself. And she opens her mouth, and I finally expect her to acknowledge my character. And for the first time since I've known her, she is straining to say something interesting, and I pay very close attention, and she asks,
is that...
Yes?
This is the only moment of the evening where I feel any genuine interest toward what she has to say, and I urge her to go on.
Yes? Is that Ivana Trump? She asks, peering over my shoulder. I whirl around. Where? Where's Ivana?
In the booth near the front, second from...
Evelyn pauses.
Brooke Astor, see?
I squint, put on my Oliver Peoples non-prescription glasses, and realize that Evelyn, her vision clouded by the cassis-riddled cristal, not only has mistaken Norris Powell for Ivana Trump, but has mistaken Steve Rubell for Brooke Astor, and I can't help it. I almost explode. No! Oh, my God! Oh, my God, Evelyn! I moan, crushed, disappointed, my adrenaline rush turning sour, my head in my hands. How could you mistake that wench for Ivana?
Sorry, I hear her chirp. Girlish mistake. That is infuriating, I hiss, both eyes clenched tight.
Our hard-body waitress, who has on satin high-backed pumps, sets down two new champagne flutes for the second bottle of Cristal Evelyn orders. The waitress pouts her lips at me when I reach for another breadstick, and I lift my head toward her and pout mine back, then press my head again into the palms of my hands, and this happens again when she brings our appetizers. Dried peppers and a spicy pumpkin soup for me, dried corn and jalapeno pudding for Evelyn. I've kept my hands over both ears trying to block out Evelyn's voice during this whole interim between her mistaking Norris Powell for Ivana Trump and the arrival of our appetizers, but now I'm hungry, so I tentatively remove my right hand from my ear. Immediately, the wine seems deafening. Tandoori chicken and foie gras and lots of jazz, and he adored the Savoy, but shad roe. The colors were gorgeous. Aloe, shell, citrus, Morgan Stanley. I clasp my hands back where they were, pressing even tighter. Once again, hunger overtakes me, and so, humming loudly to myself, I reach again for the spoon, but it's hopeless. Evelyn's voice is at a particular pitch that cannot be ignored. Gregory's graduating from St. Paul soon and will be attending Columbia in September, Evelyn is saying, carefully blowing on her pudding, which, by the way, is served cold. And I've got to get him a graduation present, and I'm at a total loss. Suggestions, hon?
A poster from Les Miserables, I sigh, only half-joking.
Perfect, she says, blowing on the pudding again. Then, after a sip of Cristal, she makes a face.
Yes, dear, I ask, spitting a pumpkin seed that arches through the air before gracefully hitting the dead center of the ashtray instead of Evelyn's dress, my original target.
Hmm? We need more cassis, she says. Will you get our waitress?
Of course we do, I say good-naturedly, and still smiling, I have no idea who Gregory is. You do know that, right? Evelyn puts her spoon down delicately next to the plate of pudding and looks into my eyes.
Mr. Bateman, I really like you. I adore your sense of humor.
She gives my hand a soft squeeze and laughs, actually says, ha, ha, ha. But she's serious, not joking. Evelyn really is paying me a compliment. She does admire my sense of humor. Our appetizers are removed, and at the same time our entrees arrive, so Evelyn has to take her hand off mine to make room for the plates. She ordered quail stuffed into blue corn tortillas, garnished with oysters and potato skins. I have the free-range rabbit with Oregon morels and herbed French fries. He went to Deerfield, then Harvard. She went to Hotchkiss, then Radcliffe. Evelyn is talking, but I'm not listening. Her dialogue overlaps her own dialogue. Her mouth is moving, but I'm not hearing anything, and I can't listen. I can't really concentrate, since my rabbit has been cut to look just like a star. Shoestring French fries surrounding it, and chunky red salsa has been smeared across the top of the plate, which is white and porcelain and 2 feet wide to give the appearance of a sunset, but it looks like one big gunshot wound to me. And shaking my head slowly in disbelief, I press a finger into the meat, leaving the indentation of one finger, then another. And then I look for a napkin, but not my own, to wipe my hand with. Evelyn hasn't broken her monologue. She talks and chews exquisitely. And smiling seductively at her, I reach under the table and grab her thigh, wiping my hand off. And still talking, she smiles naughtily at me and sips more champagne. I keep studying her face, bored by how beautiful it is, flawless, really. And I think to myself, how strange it is that Evelyn has pulled me through so much. How she's always been there when I needed her most. I look back at the plate, thoroughly unhungry, pick up my fork, study the plate hard for a minute or two, whimper to myself before sighing and putting the fork down. I pick up my champagne glass instead. Groton, Lawrenceville, Milton, Exeter, Kent, St. Paul's, Hotchkiss, Andover, Milton, Choate. Oops, already said Milton. If I'm not eating this tonight, and I'm not, I want some cocaine, I announce. But I haven't interrupted Evelyn. She's unstoppable, a machine, and she continues talking.
Jane Simpson's wedding was so beautiful, she sighs. And the reception afterwards was wild. Club Chernobyl, covered by Page Six, Billy covered it. WWD did a layout.
I heard there was a two-drink minimum, I say warily, signaling for a nearby busboy to remove my plate.
Weddings are so romantic. She had a diamond engagement ring. You know, Patrick, I won't settle for less, she says coyly. It has to be a diamond.
Her eyes glaze over it, and she tries to recount the wedding in mind-numbing detail.
It was a sit-down dinner for 500. No, excuse me, 750, followed by a 16-foot tiered Ben and Jerry's ice cream cake. The gown was by Ralph, and it was white lace and low-cut and sleeveless. It was darling. Oh, Patrick, what would you wear? She sighs.
I would demand to wear Ray-Ban sunglasses. Expensive Ray-Bans, I say carefully. In fact, I would demand that everyone would have to wear Ray-Ban sunglasses.
I'd want a Zydeco band, Patrick. That's what I'd want. A Zydeco band.
She gushes breathlessly.
Or mariachi. Or reggae. Something ethnic to shock Daddy. Oh, I can't decide.
I'd want to bring a Harrison AK-47 assault rifle to the ceremony, I say, bored, in a rush, with a 30-round magazine, so after thoroughly blowing your fat mother's head off with it, I could use it on that fag brother of yours. And though personally I don't like to use anything the Soviets designed, I don't know, the Harrison somehow reminds me of... Stopping, confused, inspecting yesterday's manicure, I look back at Evelyn. Stoli?
Oh, and lots of chocolate truffles. Godiva. And oysters. Oysters on the half shell. Marzipan. Pink tents. Hundreds, thousands of roses. Photographers. Annie Leibovitz. We'll get Annie Leibovitz, she says excitedly. And we'll hire someone to videotape it.
Or an AR-15. You'd like it, Evelyn. It's the most expensive of guns, but worth every penny. I wink at her, but she's still talking. She doesn't hear a word. Nothing registers. She does not fully grasp a word I'm saying. My essence is eluding her. She stops her onslaught and breathes in and looks at me in a way that can only be described as dewy-eyed. Touching my hand, my Rolex, she breathes in once more, this time expectantly, and says,
"We should do it."
I'm trying to catch a glimpse of our hard-body waitress. She's bending over to pick up a drop napkin. Without looking back at Evelyn, I ask, "Do what?"
"Get married," she says, blinking. "Have a wedding."
"Evelyn?"
"Yes, darling."
"Is your keir spiked?" I ask.
"We should do it," she says softly. "Patrick."
"Are you proposing to me?" I laugh. Trying to fathom this reasoning, I take the champagne glass away from her and sniff its rim.
"Patrick?"
she asks, waiting for my answer. "Geez, Evelyn," I say, stuck. "I don't know."
"Why not?" she asks, petulantly. "Give me one good reason we shouldn't."
"Because trying to fuck you is like trying to French kiss a very small and lively gerbil," I tell her. "I don't know."
"Yes," she says. "And?"
"With braces?" I finish, shrugging.
"What are you going to do?"
she asks. "Wait 3 years until you're 30? 4 years, I say, glaring. "It's 4 years until I'm 30.
4 years, 3 years, 3 months. Oh, God, what's the difference? You'll still be an old man."
She takes her hand away from mine.
"You know, you wouldn't be saying this if you'd been to Jane Simpson's wedding. You'd take one look at it and want to marry me immediately."
"I was at Jane Simpson's wedding, Evelyn, love of my life," I say. "I was seated next to Sukrit Gable. Believe me, I was there."
"You're impossible,"
she whines. You're a party pooper.
Or maybe I didn't, I wonder aloud. Maybe I... Was it covered by MTV?
And their honeymoon was so romantic. 2 hours later, they were on the Concorde to London. Oh, Claridge's.
Evelyn sighs, her hand clasped under her chin, eyes tearing. Ignoring her, I reach into my pocket for a cigar, pull it out and tap it against the table. Evelyn orders 3 flavors of sorbet, peanut, licorice, and donut. I ordered a decaffeinated espresso. Evelyn sulks. I light a match.
Patrick, she warns, staring at the flame.
What? I ask, my hand frozen in midair, about to light the tip of the cigar.
You didn't ask permission, she says, unsmiling.
Did I tell you I'm wearing my $60 boxer shorts? I ask, trying to appease her.